This is Margaret Prescott, host of Sojourner Truth. Now, the USDA is considering the first ever genetically engineered forest trees that would be approved in the United States, stretching across 7 southern states, millions of acres from coastal South Carolina to eastern Texas. Now, at the forefront of this battle against GE trees, I'd like to welcome back to Sojourner Truth Ann Peterman, the executive director of the Global Justice Ecology Project, and co-founded the project in 2003. She's also the international coordinator of the campaign to stop GE trees, which she co-founded in 2014. And she is a founding board member of the Will Miller Social Justice Lecture Series. She has been involved in movements for forest protection and indigenous rights since the early 1990s. Ann Peterman, welcome back.
Thank you so much for having me, Margaret.
Right. I'd like to say that also the Global Justice Ecology Project partners with us for our weekly Earth Minute. Those of you who listen to our Earth Minute, you will hear, recognize Ann Peterman's voice, and also we partner with them for the weekly Earth Watch. So, Ann, it was actually yesterday that ended the public comment period. Where are things at right now with the campaign?
Well, we've got some amazing news. We have well over 250,000 people who've signed on to tell the USDA in no uncertain terms that these genetically engineered eucalyptus trees must be completely rejected, that in no form can these be allowed to move forward. The grand total of comments at this point that we've had, that we've calculated, is over 270,000, so well over 250,000 people.
Wow.
Which is far and away the most that we've ever had by far sign on against GE trees. So the momentum is continuing to build. We've been working on this particular issue since 2010 or 2009 when ArborGen first proposed a large quantity of field trials out in the wild that comprised 250,000 trees. We sued them over that. Then the USDA came back in 2013 releasing the petition, an actual petition from the GE tree company saying we want to legalize the widespread distribution of these trees commercially, so not just field trials, but commercially. And we, at that time, we got 40,000 comments at the rate of about 10,000 to one. So 4 comments came in favor of the proposal versus 40,000 that were opposed. And now we've got 270,000. So we've vastly increased the number of people since then who've said no to this. And I think the fact that there have been these massive wildfires in Portugal and in Chile that started in genetically engineered eucalyptus, in conventional, non-genetically engineered eucalyptus plantations is, I think, a big warning for people and a big red flag about what the possible risks are if these plantations were developed across the U.S. South, which is already experiencing heat waves and droughts.
And you're quite right about Portugal. Last week, in fact, we had a guest who was based on the ground in Portugal, and we talked about the catastrophic wildfires. But what is the reason being given for developing these genetically engineered eucalyptus trees?
They like the eucalyptus trees because they are applicable over a wide range of uses. So, for example, right now across the region, they have a lot of loblolly pine plantations. But pines are a softwood, and so they really are good for pulp and paper and perhaps development of some liquid biofuels if they ever got that technology sorted out. But eucalyptus are a hardwood species, which means that they can use them for pulp and paper, they can use them for wood pellets, they can use them for burning, for biomass. You know, they can do all kinds of things with eucalyptus trees that they can't do with softwood pine plantations. So that means that they can, wherever the market blows, they can respond with their plantations. They don't have to wait for, you know, if the pulp and paper market goes down, they don't have to worry about it because they'll just shift the eucalyptus trees to biomass production, for example.
Right. And, you know, this idea, I recently saw a film about genetically engineered seeds and the impact, the devastating impact it has on the life, the health of vulnerable populations. This particular film focused on children, and it was really scary, you know, what happens. And of course, the farmers who are trying to farm organically, and then you have these, you know, Franken seeds blowing over and contaminating their crops. So the idea now that this will be extended to trees, right, you know, which is so important to our oxygen and to our evolution, you know, as people. Tell us more about the fears of the impact of genetically engineered trees.
Yes, exactly. I mean, these trees are actually much more serious than annual crops. They're not edible, these trees that we're talking about, these forest trees, these eucalyptus, genetically engineered eucalyptus trees. But the thing about trees that differentiates them from crop plants is that these trees can grow for decades. And if these plantations are abandoned, which often happens when we're talking about lots and lots of small plots of eucalyptus plantations, which is what's happening in Portugal and led to the wildfires, and would is the same thing that would happen across the U.S. South if these were approved, because we're talking about lots and lots of small landowners. We're not talking about, you know, one big landowner that has a million acres of plantations, but thousands of landowners. So, of course, in that case, some of these plantations are going to become abandoned. And what that means is they can grow as, you know, as long as they want. They can drift into national forests, you know, because they're very invasive. All kinds of things can happen, and they become even more flammable. The older eucalyptus trees get, the more flammable they get. So, you know, genetically engineered trees are contaminating, a contamination threat for more than just the year of an annual crop plant that, like corn, for example, but they can continue to contaminate through or invade throughout their lifetime, depending on what kind of tree we're talking about. They're also genetically engineering poplar trees, for example, which have native wild relatives in forests all over this continent. You know, that could be a serious contamination threat if those GE poplars started spreading their seeds and pollen into forests, because it's irreversible. Once that cycle starts, there's no way to stop it. There's no way to pull those trees back. There's no way to contain that. And they spread their pollen much more over much greater distances than annual crop plants. So, you know, trees can spread their pollen for hundreds of miles, whereas annual crop plants usually don't spread their pollen more than a few miles. So the contamination threat is extreme. And of course, we're talking about trees that interact with forest ecosystems, which themselves are highly complex, from the soil microorganisms to the insects, to the wildlife, to the birds, to the understory plants, etc. These are not sterile cornfields. These are biodiverse ecosystems that have very delicate and highly evolved relationships. And you put in a tree that has never been there before, in the case of eucalyptus, or has had its genetics changed, and there's absolutely no way to know what's going to happen in that ecosystem with those, you know, foreign organisms. So, you know, there's so many risks involved here that it's absolutely ridiculous that the USDA would consider approving these trees.
Yeah, and Ann Peterman, does anybody really know the impact on the health of the animal kingdom, so to speak, as well as human beings, of genetically engineered trees? Because, I mean, there's eucalyptus trees, but we know that they're also developing other genetically engineered trees. Ann Peterman.
The health effects of these trees is really being completely ignored. You know, I think it's kind of the industry just closing their eyes and closing their ears and hoping that question goes away. But certainly when we're talking about, let's say, a tree that's been engineered to be insect resistant or herbicide tolerant, there are great health risks involved. In the case of insect resistant trees, every single cell of the tree contains the insecticide, which means that includes the pollen. So when the pollen blows around, people inhale it, and that has health impacts. especially for people who are sensitive to pollen, but even for people who aren't. What are those health impacts? Well, that has, you know, has not been adequately assessed, and it has not been independently studied. So that's a serious health risk. Then also the risk of herbicide-tolerant trees, where you're now dumping huge quantities of toxic chemicals on these plantations to knock out all of the competition trees or other understory plants. Obviously, this stuff gets into groundwater. It contaminates the water, and communities nearby drink that water, and there are all kinds of health impacts. We see that already in countries like Brazil and Chile, which have non-genetically engineered eucalyptus plantations and already suffer these kinds of consequences just because of the ground spraying of these herbicides that happens. So you could imagine if these herbicides are now being sprayed from the air in much larger quantities, that these health impacts will be much more serious.
Yeah, and Peterman, I mean, this is, you know, so alarming. I mean, so many of us are suffering from various respiratory illnesses. I know I certainly have. And, you know, allergies and hay fever, children being impacted, older people being impacted, people literally dying from some of this. So to me, this is really an emergency, an environmental emergency here. And given the present administration that seems to care even less about the environment than previous administrations, what is there anything that our listeners can do right now besides being aware of it? Anything else they can do?
Absolutely. You know, this is just the beginning. The end of the public comment period for this draft environmental impact statement just means that now the government takes all those comments and turns them into their final environmental impact statement, where they will make their final ruling as to what happens with these trees. But there's plenty of other opportunities for intervention, you know, that aren't through the official environmental impact statement avenues. And people can go to our website, which is there's a stopgetrees.org website and a nogetrees.org website. Both of those have ways that you can get a hold of us, and we can plug you in to different things that are happening. There will be, you know, different actions being planned. There's letter writing campaigns. There's all kinds of things depending on people's level of ability and commitment to get involved. And, you know, this campaign is just going to continue to get stronger and more active, not less. This is just one more step along the way.
Well, Ann Peterman, thank you so much for all of your work and leadership on this particular issue, and also for partnering with us for our weekly Earth Minute and our weekly Earth Watch. And our listeners should know that we link on the Sojourner Truth website at sotrueradio.org, we link to the website of the Global Justice Ecology Project. So that's another way of getting information. Ann Peterman, thank you and all the best with this.
Thank you so much, Margaret.